Welcome to the fourth lecture in the Introduction to the 19 Letters. And we're discussing Rehrsch's approach, his response to modernity. And we got up to discussion now how one should look at Torah Derech Eretz. So let's start off with the synthesis side. So Hegel, who was a younger contemporary of Kant, he said the following idea. He said that if you have an absolute idea, which is a thesis, and you have an apparently contradictory idea, which we can call an antithesis, so these would be reconciled on a higher level of truth by a third proposition known as a synthesis. So to explain this in a Torah way, one could say that Torah and life and Judaism and culture, these are apparently thesis and antithesis, these achieve a complete identity which we can call a synthesis. So just like Hashem is one, so we also have to strive to be one. That's a very fancy way to say how Torah and Derech Eretz go together. Now, according to some, it's a total misnomer to say that Torah and Derech Eretz is a synthesis of any sort, and that Rav Hirsch, he would have never said such a thing, and he would have never meant such a thing. So like the Novominska Rebbe, for example, see, he holds that way. And so does Rebbe Shlomo Danziger. And I'm going to read out from an article from Jewish Action. And this is entitled The Jewish Action Symposium. And it's from 1986. Holiday issue 5747 on page 21. So Rabbi Danziger, he wrote as follows. He wrote, "This is no synthesis, which was the fatal flaw of Mendelssohn's system, according to Rav Hirsch. We follow only God's Torah, but Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, civilization or culture, precedes the Torah chronologically and logically. It is the given raw material of life, which the Torah does not supply. The relationship of culture to Torah is that of substance to form in the Aristotelian sense. The task of any generation is to Torahize the culture of that generation and to reject whatever cannot be Torahized. In our times of rampant immorality and crumbling values, much, even most of the raw material must be rejected outright. Yet our generation is also the repository of the best that the human spirit has produced in science and in culture, which can indeed be Torahized. Torahization, not supplementation, is the essence of Torah Derech Eretz, and its goal, as reiterated by Rav Hirsch time and again, is to attain Shechina nearness in all aspects of normal living, a far cry from synthesis. In this system there is a spectrum, as there has always been in Klal Yisrael, ranging from those who make the study of Torah their profession, to those who set aside only minimal periods for study during the day and during the night, with the majority in between. A healthy Torah community has always been based on many and varied occupations and professions. But those who choose to make the study of Torah their profession are considered the most valued resource of the community, the highest of all professions. The goal of all is to moderate Derech Eretz and to maximize the study of Torah. Yet, in this system, even those who make the study of Torah their profession, even the Rosh Yeshiva and leading authorities, despite severe limitations of time, maintain an interest in and relate to general thought and affairs. Intensive Torah learning need not be the prerogative of the non-Hirschian world." So Rabbi Danziger there is very clear that he holds not only is the idea of saying that Torah Derech Eretz is a synthesis is incorrect, but he holds that that's what Rav Hirsch held was Mendelssohn's key mistake. Another source that holds that Torah Derech Eretz is not a synthesis comes from a article written by Dr. Maximilian Landau. This was written in 1936. And Dr. Landau writes, "The popular conception of Torah and Derech Eretz understands it as a synthesis between Judaism and general culture. But Hirsch never intended it as a synthesis. His ideal, Mensch Yisrael, was not to be the product of the joining or even the blending of two opposing worlds, but was meant to be the end result of a monolithic development. A tree growing from a single root, unfolding its branches in many directions, the prototype of the perfect, uncompromising Jewish man who, being beyond all dualism, absorbs and assimilates worldly civilization as a Jew and lives his Judaism in the fullness of human existence. For Judaism and culture are not two commensurable concepts of equal magnitude. Culture is not a fixed and finite entity toward which only one of two alternative attitudes is possible, either unconditional and a wholehearted affirmation with all the ensuing consequences, or conversely, a scrupulous avoidance and panicky flight as if from something corrupting or evil. Culture is rather a process, a development, which is in constant flux, an everlasting coming into being which is subject to conscious intervention on our part, whose final form is determined by the intensity of our participation, a function of our creative efforts. Now, in a lot of ways, this is really semantics of trying to understand the same issue, and this may not be as big as an argument as it's going to sound as we continue to explain the issue. And nevertheless, I think it's good to try to see the different opinions on it, even if at the end of the day, there might not really be such an argument as it's made out to be. Now, my understanding is that the Sri Daesh and Professor Leo Levy, they both say that it's a synthesis, and we know that the Sri Daesh was most definitely a gadol. Tan Grunfeld, I believe, also says that it's a synthesis. Rabbi/Mr. Jacob Rosenheim, so he was a student of Rav Hirsch, so he also calls Torah Derech Eretz a synthesis. And the quote that I'm referring to was on page 17 in Cultural Ideal and Our Times. That's Rav Hirsch's Cultural Ideal and Our Times. So he writes that the carefully thought out and planned assimilation of the former, secular studies, into the latter, Torah, through the guidance of God-fearing Jewish teachers. So assimilation here, to me at least, shows that he's referring to a synthesis. And further on the next page, on page 18, he writes, he, Rav Hirsch, was convinced of an easy possibility of a harmonious blending of all dominant cultural values of his time with his Torah and Talmud Judaism superior to time-bound conditions. So again, this idea of harmonious blending also to me sounds very much like a synthesis, right? So we could explain that it's Torah im Derech Eretz. The im refers to a complete and total synthesis in that there's no really secular per se. The Derech Eretz either fits into the Torah system and is therefore a tool for Torah, or doesn't fit in and therefore it has no place in Torah at all. I mean, we could say that, according to Rav Hirsch, some types of art, let's say, would be totally usher because it just doesn't fit into Torah. And maybe most cinema-type productions would also be usher. Now, Rav Hirsch, he took this idea of synthesizing, or depending on how we understand it, to the extent that in his school there was no room for any kind of a mixed message. So the teachers in his school were either they were totally from people, or they were upstanding non-Jews. There was no such thing as a reformer conservative teacher, because that gives over a mixed message. There's one type of Jew. There's a type of Jew who looks at everything through Torah, and anything less than that is completely watered down. And of course, there are upstanding non-Jews in the world as well. Now, Rabbi Wein, he explains in a similar way that we have to put them together to such an extent that the Torah supremacy rules over all of the Derech Eretz completely. So just like Hashem is Echad, He's completely and totally one, like no other one, so too in our own lives, we have to endeavor to be that same type of a one, where there is no contradiction in our mind. It's totally blended, it's totally synthesized to such an extent that there is no contradiction at all, and that all the Derech Eretz is 100% being used for the Torah and subsumed under Torah. So I'm just going to play the track from Rabbi Wein where he says that.
One more thing that I want to talk about, and that's the ideas of humanism. So the idea of humanism, he accepted, but he said that it's one of the mitzvahs. And the mitzvah of being a human being, one and whole, then one relates oneself to the one God. That is how we imitate the yichud, the oneness of God, is by not being a split personality, by not being a secular Jew one place and a religious Jew another place by not having two standards. So I want to read for you again Hirsch's words. I can translate it from the German. For the Jew, the unity of life, both individual and collective, is as important an axiom as the unity of God. Hashem Echod, so we say, you know, Echod, that same Echod should be for us. I am Echod, but that's very hard to achieve. This conception of the unity of life, like the unity of God, is the eternal glory of Israel, and is the only remedy for our sick Jewish world. It's written in 1858. In case you think that, you know, everything was perfect till we got here.
Okay, so we're going to discuss this more in detail later. However, the question is, who really cares if it's considered a synthesis or not a synthesis? Like, what possible difference does it make? So this could be a major difference between Torah Derech Eretz and Torah Umada. Because according to Rav Hirsch, if a subject doesn't fit into Torah, so it's, you know, potentially apikarsis, and the Torah Derech Eretz follower will have nothing to do with it, as we explained already in detail. And the more that one is up on their Torah, then the easier time one's going to have sifting between the truth of what's in accordance to Torah and the outside philosophies that should be rejected. Right? When we need to understand the word synthesis, even according to Rav Hirsch, this doesn't mean that there's no distinction between Torah and Derech Eretz. It means that the Torah has supremacy over the Derech Eretz, because everything's a tool for Torah. So we could actually see some of this inside in the collective writings. And I refer the listener to the Collective Writings, Volume 7, pages 19 to 25. It would be a lot to read out, so I think we'll skip it. But Hirsch basically discusses that if we had an either-or choice before us, then we would, of course, pick Torah alone. But he says that that's absolutely not what's necessary. And he explains how when we become firmly rooted in Torah, how the secular assists us and helps us to understand our duties as Torah Jews. So just to explain the Torah Umada aspect of this, so this I heard from Rabbi Rukefet on a lecture that he has on YU Torah, and he says according to Torah Umada, the two worlds are totally separate. There's Torah, the Torah world, and there's the secular world, and they're different and they're equal. Now, therefore, one may certainly learn in order to understand the apikarsis in and of itself, even though it has little or nothing to do with Torah. And as a result, one could have apikarsis taught, and the schools actually, should be able to hire reform, conservative, whoever they want, even someone who's not moral, to teach. The way Rabbi Rukefet explained it, he said in this sense, the synthesis is also applied to YU, in that Kodesh and Chol are both synthesized together. So again, it's in some ways it's semantics. It depends how you use the word and what you mean by it. Meaning, if everyone was using the same explanation and understanding of the word synthesis, this whole argument might disappear, and you would need new ways to explain the same thing. And one could definitely see this distinction between Rav Hirsch's system and, let's say, a place like Yeshiva University. Rabbi Rukefet always says over this story of, I forget the exact professor, who would come in, so a Jewish guy, Apikoros, and he would say in YU that with the help of God, I'm now going to disprove the existence of God. But in the Rav's own words, which again I heard from Rabbi Rukefet, and this is a paraphrase of what he said, he said, one must wear two hats. Yeshiva and college are two separate things. One head is only for Torah and should be the same as it was in Brisk and Valajan, and the other should be totally college. Zero thought or control over this college or secular part, meaning Torah control. One must either learn to sink, to swim, or to sink. Now, I don't know who's been more accepted or more successful. I don't know if those questions could be answered simply or not simply, but there is a certain truth to that as well, that a person will, just by living in the Western world, will definitely be challenged by things that are definitely opposite of what the Torah wants a person to be, how a person should be. And again, according to Rav Hirsch, you would reject those outright, according to the Torah Mado system, as explained by Rabbi Rekefet, that a person basically, in order to be around and live in the world as it is, a person would basically have to learn to deal with that and to know about it and to have some knowledge of this system. Now, exactly why a person should have to do that is something, I guess, that could be discussed and argued. So just to mention, first of all, one of the major criticisms of Rav Hirsch's system is that it didn't supposedly produce any gedolim, and certainly not to the stature that you get in the Eastern European system. So this point was raised by Rav Dessler, and it was responded to by Rav Schwab in an essay. And the essay is entitled, Rav Shimon Schwab, A Letter Regarding the Frankfurt Approach. It's from Tradition Magazine, and it was translated by Schneer Zalman Lyman. And it's available online. You could find this essay, and it's well worth reading. It starts on page 71, if you happen to just find Tradition Magazine. But you can find the actual article itself online. If anyone needs access to the article, so email me and I will send you the article. Now, I think it's also appropriate to narrow in on another major difference between Rav Hirsch's system and the yeshiva world. The yeshiva world was set up for the elite. And if you weren't one of the elite, and you wanted a job, then you were not considered part of the backbone of Judaism. And in their words, it was basically better that 1,000 people should fail and only one should succeed. And they did fail, because you find that the rate of attrition among the yeshiva system was very high, yet they still believed that this was the way to go. And Rav Dessler, he articulates this. Now, by contrast, the very backbone of Rav Hirsch's system was that Torah applies to and is the property of the masses. And Rav Hirsch, he states this again and again and again. And the attrition rate, by comparison, was very low. Now, that might not be the fairest comparison, because Eastern Europe and Western Europe were very different worlds. However, those are the facts, nevertheless. And I want to quote for you from Mark Shapiro's book, Between the Yeshiva World and Modern Orthodoxy, and this comes from pages 27 to 29. Anyone who wants to know about the Sri Deish, so this book comes highly recommended, and it doesn't just discuss the Sri Deish, but all the background information and what went on throughout his life, as all of Dr. Shapiro's books, it's excellent. So he writes like this, the sentiments behind Weinberg's view, Weinberg refers to the Sri Deish. Again, this is written in a scholarly way, so pardon me, I'm just reading it the way it is. The sentiments behind Weinberg's view were elaborated on some years later by Rav Dessler, a leading ideologue of the Lithuanian yeshivos, whose position faithfully reflected that of the East European rabbinic elite. Dessler freely admitted that the combination of Torah and secular studies advocated by German Orthodoxy had a great appeal for the masses and produced pious communities with very little attrition. However, Rav Dessler continued, since Torah study was diluted in Germany, it did not produce the outstanding scholars found in the East. As for Eastern Europe, Rav Dessler is perfectly candid in stating that East European Orthodoxy had a much higher attrition rate among its young. Indeed, as mentioned earlier, as far back as the 1880s, there were more Russian Jews in the universities than in the great yeshivas. It was in hope of attracting some of the students that in 1882, Reinis established a yeshiva in some town I can't pronounce, Lithuania, which offered secular studies. The project met with widespread opposition, and the yeshiva was soon forced to close. Not until 1905 did Reinis repeat his experiment in Lida, Lido, where once again the rabbinic elite united in opposition to any changes in the yeshiva curriculum as a means of responding to the widespread abandonment of tradition. As Rav Dessler explained, this opposition was due to the unique mission of the yeshivos, which was concerned with creating outstanding Torah scholars and was never intended to have a mass appeal. Even though he realized that the majority of youngsters would not succeed in this system, and that a number would even abandon Orthodoxy completely, Rav Dessler nevertheless recalled Rambam's comment in the introduction to the Guide of the Perplexed, the Mor Nevuchim, that the instruction of a tiny elite is more important than attempting to educate a mass audience. In his own words, this is the price which must be paid in order to produce saintly Torah giants. But as already pointed out, this approach was diametrically opposed to the view of Rav Hirsch, who believed that the only way to ensure the survival of traditional Judaism was by concentrating on creating pious communities, not on building yeshivos, which would cater to the elite. At this time, Rav Weinberg was certainly not unaware of Rav Hirsch's views. He even recorded a conversation he had with a leading Russian rabbi who was very impressed with Rav Hirsch's piety. Rav Weinberg asked this rabbi why the East European Jews should not strive to develop a German-style orthodoxy. The rabbi replied with surprise, "First, we don't have any rabbis of the caliber of Hirsch. Second, do you really want to replace the Shagas Aryeh with the Chorev?" Which, by the way, that is a real low blow. "As long as we have young people devoted to the Torah in our yeshivos, we have no reason to renounce our Torah in favor of a small amount of modern education. However, it remains doubtful whether Rav Weinberg's knowledge of the philosophy of Rav Hirsch, or of German Orthodoxy as a whole, was more than perfunctory. In fact, the previously quoted passage shows Weinberg strenuously opposing the very ideas which were advocated by Rav Hirsch. The notion of making Judaism appealing, of putting the beauty of Yefes into the tents of shame, was the center of Rav Hirsch's program and was intended to apply to all people at all times. Rav David Zvi Hoffman, who was at this time the rector of the Rabbinical Seminary of Berlin and Germany's leading halachist, spoke for all of German Orthodoxy when he wrote that our sages also intended, through their statement, let the chief beauty of Yefes, meaning Greek, be in the tents of shame, to allow entry of the entire range of culture and learning insofar as they ennoble humanity into the tents of shame, i.e. the Jewish houses of study." So, exactly like we've explained until now. So, to me, the first method is really untenable. It's difficult to see how anyone could say that Torah is for an elite class of Jews, right? Because the Bali Batim, we are the Jewish people. We're the backbone of the Jewish people. We're the ones who have to actively live and be involved in Jewish life in every way. Now, this, of course, gets into other details of like Torah Lishma and other topics, which we're going to touch on later. Now, of course, the Bali Batim are the ones that have to dedicate their lives completely to following the Torah. Obviously, the person who's following Torah only is hopefully fully dedicated to Torah. I mean, one would hope that would come together. But the Bali Batim, in the same way that Rav Hirsch was advocating it, have to have this Torah so completely synthesized, for lack of any other word that I know to use. To quote Rav Hirsch in one place where he discusses this, he writes, "The Anshei Knesset HaGadolah were thoroughly familiar with the learning of which they considered not themselves, but the entire nation to be the custodians, the learning of which they wished each and every member of their nation to become an ardent disciple." So this is a very long subject, and I think that we've basically touched on a lot of points here. And most yeshivas today, again, what we were talking about before was the original yeshiva system, but most yeshivas today have, to a major extent, taken a middle path. Like, you have morning kollels, afternoon kollels, you have night kollels, you have Bali Batim learning at various times and working in the yeshiva. In the original yeshiva system, this wasn't happening. It was definitely not set up like in the same way that we're used to. So you could definitely see how the yeshiva system has moved in some ways to accommodate a more general learning. And you see also how the Hirschian system has moved more towards the yeshiva system as well, which we will definitely discuss as well. So, do we have any definitions of Torim Derech Eretz, more than what we've said already? So we have one from Rav Shlomo Danziger. This comes from a book called The Living Hirschian Legacy on page 92. And Rav Danziger writes as follows. He writes, Rav Hirsch was a gaon in Talmud and in Mikra. That was the title of the first lecture given by Rav Perlau Shlita. This is, I believe this was from a public lecture that he gave. Now, Rav Hirsch was a warrior. That was the title and the content of the second lecture given by our Rav Shlita. But there is still another aspect of Rav Hirsch, which is essential to an understanding of what he really meant by Torah and Derech Eretz. In addition to being a gaon, in addition to being a fighter, he was clearly a tzaddik, a man on fire with the flame of the Esh Das of Hashem's Torah. Now this is meant to be a lecture, not a sermon, with oratorical flourishes. So I will make an objective statement befitting a lecture. To understand the Torah and Derech Eretz principle of Rav Hirsch, we must realize that he was clearly a tzaddik, a man on fire, with a flame of the Esh Das of Hashem's Torah. And do you know what the Esh Das of Hashem's Torah is meant to accomplish in the view of Rabbeinu HaTzaddik? Only one thing, the nearness of the Shekhinah, an awareness that we are always in the presence of God, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, we are always in the house of our Father, Shivti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai, not only in the Beis HaMikdash, not only in the Beis HaKnesses, not only in the Beis HaMedrash, but from there the awareness overflows into the world of business, into the world of the professions, into the streets, into the dining room, into the bedroom, into the places of work, and into the places of relaxation, into all aspects of normal living, in all the vicissitudes of life, in sorrow and in joy, Shivti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai, always in our Father's house, always in His presence, always aware of His nearness. This is the goal of Hashem's Torah. This is the goal of Torim Derech Eretz. This is what Torim Derech Eretz meant to Rav Hirsch. So that's how Rabbi Danziger explains Torim Derech Eretz. And let's take from Diane Gornfeld. This comes from Three Generations, a book that he wrote about Rav Hirsch's influence. And this is from page 3. And Diane Gornfeld writes as follows. He says, the influence of Hirsch's conception of Torah Judaism is bound to increase in the modern world. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. As in his own day, so are we witnessing once more a deep crisis in the development of Western civilization and its transitions into a new era. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, by virtue of his passionate conviction of the eternal newness of the Torah and its applicability to any situation which might arise, that has shown that historic Judaism need not fear the rise of new civilizations nor the transplanting of Jews to a new new environments. The task of the Jew, he held, was not to level down the Torah to the changing spirit of the times, but to lift up the manifestations of a given civilization to the ideals of the Torah. So there are many explanations of Torim Derech Eretz and what they are. Succinctly put, I think we said it well already, we said Torah, civilization, or more likely, the dominance of Torah over the aspects of all of life and all of civilization. So that basically takes care of a lot of the background information for the historical aspect of the 19 letters. And starting with the next section, we're going to look into Rav Hirsch himself and what he's done and what his effects are, some of his effects are on Jewish life today.